part of nature.
Good afternoon, everybody. Today is May 11th, 2017. It is 2 a.m. It's the Josephine County Board of Commissioners convening for a general discussion. We have one item on the agenda, which is a transit matter of the transit program, transit master plan work overview with our consultants. However, before that, I asked JJ to come forward. An issue's been brought to my attention that I think the board needs to be aware of, and so we'd like to move forward with something, and JJ's going to present that. Or do you want me to talk about it?
I can go ahead.
Okay.
So our emergency manager has intimated that she intends to give us notice, but she's not specific on the date of her notice. That being said, it's in our best interest to go ahead and post early with the attempts to get the notice out there really before fire season, because once fire season hits, people in the emergency management field really aren't looking for work. So we'll get the best applicant pool if we move quickly. And hopefully we'll be able to get a great candidate who can have some crossover with our current emergency manager to have a better continuity of operation.
Excellent. That's exactly it. So we're looking to just endorse the idea of advertising. I'm going to review, I've got a redline version in my inbox as far as some responsibilities that are in the current job description that have actually been more concentrated in our emergency manager in the public health department. So there's things that this current position doesn't do anymore, really, or isn't the focal point of leading that effort. So we want to strip those out, and that's the main adjustment.
Is there a job description of the roles and responsibilities available somewhere?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm reviewing right now. Do you want to review that?
We have a current job description, but it was last revised, I think 2012, something like that, or maybe 2010.
Fairly recent.
Oh, yeah. It could be more.
Well, it's current with the exception of emergency management in the county used to have two basic functions. It was emergency management, which is what Janie currently does, but it also was emergency preparedness when it comes to public health. And that focuses more on infection control and vector control and that sort of stuff. And those functions she doesn't do anymore because we have a person who does that in public health. So those duties that are in the current job description really should be pulled out. Even when they were in, our previous emergency manager used to say it was impossible to get them both done. It was too much for one job, and it was, which is why we added the position in public health.
That was my brainchild to put those two together to save money. But it didn't work.
It didn't work.
No. Well, we tried.
Where do they coordinate with, like, search and rescue during emergency manager? Because it seems like search and rescue has all the equipment.
There's certain things that they coordinate with, but their function
no
is
requirement to do.
And their function is a fair amount different. Search and rescue, oftentimes they work together, but their role is a little different.
Our Jackson County's plan, is it similar to ours? Because I know that there's a, what do they call that? Where one, you know,
mutual aid.
Thank you, mutual aid. Are they? I mean, for instance, if our manager goes over there as a mutual aid thing while the other one's on vacation or whatever,
we are probably the tightest in the state with that. It's almost.
They're already working.
Okay. So it's a seamless.
Sarah used to work here. They both used to work.
Right.
Both worked here. Went over to Jackson. Jenny came over here. Sarah still lives in Josephine County.
Right.
She fills in for Jenny when she's not here.
Okay.
She actually handles our Facebook page for us.
It means nothing to me.
No, but Jenny wasn't a Facebooker, and Sarah does Josephine County's Emergency Management Facebook page.
Yeah, she does a good job.
So okay.
It's fairly seamless, and I don't know of another county other than maybe Sherman and Gillum, those two small counties where they have a total population together, I think, of 3,000 or something like that.
They share restrooms.
They're tight. They do it.
They share the jail.
Yeah, they do. So, yeah, I what we were talking about is Jenny's looking to, at some point in the near future, but not knowing exactly when, but looking to try to put that together as soon as possible. So JJ is asking on my behalf to endorse the idea of putting out the ad for that position. Probably till the end of May-ish in that time frame, and then we'd take a look at those people and evaluate and If Jenny's not here at the end of the calendar fiscal year, we'd like a week or so, 2 weeks of overlap, if possible. So that puts us on a pretty tight time frame, and so we need to move forward.
Idea.
Okay. Well, I'll review that job description and get those things, and then we'll give a copy. But I don't want that to hold up our advertising.
Nope.
Ideally, we'd like to move forward. It can always be changed, you know, tweaked if necessary. But the broad scope is what we're looking to achieve.
Well, and one thing with that, in talking with Jenny, one of the roles that I've played is being kind of involved with the public safety meetings at AOC, mm-hmm. is the subcommittee on resiliency and mm-hmm. resilient counties. And that is not in Jenny's wheelhouse. Mm-hmm. And so that may be something that we'd be looking at. I mean, what Jenny is an emergency manager statewide are really good at is they are the resource. If there is a disaster, you contact them and they say, what do you need? And they arrange to get those things. They're kind of an assessor of, do you need bulldozers? Do you need medical unit? Do you need this? Do you need that? And they quickly see, how do we get that resource to you? That's kind of the gist of what they do. But in
and
a
plan preparation is
and some of that, but when we come to making
services.
Yeah, and but when we look at resilient counties, and the idea is, if we have a long-term downtime of services, if we have the earthquake and we have three bridges and we are separated from our hospital or vice versa, how do we get things in place for that? We have an early warning detection system in Cave Junction. As a county, I don't know that we're necessarily connected to that warning system. That's through the University of Oregon. And the newest one is... Yes. And the other one is power. If power were out for a substantial amount of time, how do we provide essential services as a county? How do we provide the different things the community...
I think those are great conversations and excellent points. But for right now, just need to move this forward. And then when we have interviews... looking for people who have
could
that
be both.
Nuance to their mm-hmm. background and their work history, I think I'm totally dovetailing with exactly what you're talking about. I think that needs to be, the way I envision it, that person needs to spearhead the team of people that work on that, because I don't think it's a one person's job. But
Julie
right
from
now,
Lincoln County seems to be just a great asset in that topic. If mm-hmm. we needed somebody yeah. that could be a help. And she's part of their association statewide.
Well, this wasn't an agenda item, but I think just giving JJ direction on that is perfect, and we can get the one step moving.
We can move
forward
on
multi-step process. So thank you very much.
All right. Thank
and,
you.
I'll get you that by the end of the day or tomorrow.
Okay, we'll make it happen.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Chancy, could you bring your team up and make introductions if possible? So I'll introduce myself. My name is Simon Hare, Weston County Commissioner, and current chair of the board. Used to be the liaison to transit for 5 years before my esteemed colleague over there, Commissioner DeYoung, joined the board. And he's a transportation guru. I don't know about transit. I wouldn't want to speak that way. But he's been on the RV Act in his capacity as a city councilor for a number of years. Seven years. So he, from that standpoint, he's intimately involved in transportation. So.
And I wanted to say thank you to you. I'm Lily Morgan, by the way. I'm their other co-worker. When I was coming in, Route 10, which was the big bus, came all the way to this intersection and pulled over because there was
no
backup line. So they didn't block the lane of travel, which I just want to say thank you.
You're welcome.
Because you know my thoughts on the other one.
Right.
So well, I was impressed that they came all the way down here and were waiting to pick up folks just to avoid being in the line of traffic because there was a place they could pull over.
Yeah, not to hijack the conversation or anything, but after our last conversation, I again redistributed a memo, and some of the discussions I had with the drivers were quite interesting as to what their version of what was going on out here was. So it's always interesting.
So Lily Morgan, and anything else? And Commissioner DeYoung, he's the liaison to Public Works, where transit is obviously housed. And
I read your report.
You did.
You did.
Wonderful.
I only made it to page 35.
Well, we'll be able to answer questions then. I'd like to do a little presentation.
Yes,
which
definitely.
It involves plugging things in.
We can do that.
I can get started on that while we
sure.
introduce ourselves.
I don't know how to do this.
Probably that.
Okay.
Green.
Do you want to do it on that?
Does anyone ever use that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
How to do that?
I don't.
One of us.
There's
it looks
a VGA.
Like it's the other side. Unless, I mean, we do have, this is the computer box here. So we have these boxes.
Treat that just like a monitor of the computer.
Right.
Are you wanting to use your computer?
Yeah.
Is it a blue or a white that you plug into?
I'll get my nephew in here.
Yeah.
It's
a blue.
When I was working in DC.
I think we're on,
or we can use, we can use HDMI.
Do you want me to sync it? And
that is neither.
That's DVI. Let me see what you have over here. So I have HDMI over here, but I don't have ports.
But why it doesn't work or
here's another.
Well, let's see.
Do you need some help?
Yes.
Do you have extra cables? Do you have an HDMI cable? Let me look in here if we got a blue one.
What are you trying to do?
A monitor.
Connect.
The blue monitor. Cords. So you see how this one has the white
but
at the end?
I know, but what are you trying
give
to do?
Give a presentation.
Do you have
is it
on a screen?
A PowerPoint?
Yes.
Or
yes.
Yes.
It's a thumb drive?
Is it the same one that you submitted?
It can be put on.
No, I submitted this report.
Can you email it and I can pull it up on this computer?
Yes.
Okay.
Some parts of it are going to look creepy, but that'll be okay. Fonts change, things like that.
That's okay.
I knew we'd get this figured out.
Don't hold me
responsible. So we're not going to be reviewing the report?
We are.
Both?
It's just that basically the pictures from the report are in there.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah.
It's just shorter.
What's the email address?
T Wharton, WHARTON at co.josephine.or.us.
Okay.
So while they're doing that, I'll quickly kind of bring everybody up to speed. This this
maybe
is
introductions if you would
mind,
Mr. Chancy.
Sure. Well, I'm Scott Chancy.
Daniel Constantino.
And I'm Michelle Poirot.
Great.
And they're both consultants with Jarrett Walker and Associates. Cool. So that was the lead firm that
where is Jarrett Walker and Associates located?
Portland, Oregon.
And Richmond, Virginia.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And apparently all the space in between.
So this process, it was in the preparation for coming up with our transit master plan. So this has been going on since, I think, January. So we have an existing conditions and choices report. There's going to be another meeting coming up this Saturday. We're going to have a stakeholder workshop where stakeholders that have been selected throughout the community will come together, review this report, make some recommendations, and then we're going to kind of move forward from there. So in between that, since the consultants were in town, I wanted to take an opportunity for them to go over what we came up with so far to the county commissioners. So
awesome.
It's not coming through. It's still going out on this end.
Oh. Do I need to give you the Wi-Fi connection?
No, it's good. It's working. Okay. It's on its way out. It's squeezing
the
through the tube.
Except 20, what is it, megabytes?
I think it's 9 megabytes.
Okay.
And we should sort of explain our relative roles on this project and our roles in the firm. I'm a principal with Jarrett Walker and Associates. I was the second employee, and we are now have 9 employees, right?
9, 10, we're getting there.
So we're still very, very small, although we've grown quite a bit in the last couple of years. Daniel and I are both project managers, so we work in small cities. We work in communities much smaller than Grants Pass, and we also work in communities much, much larger than Grants Pass. Redesigning transit networks, but especially leading public conversation about why people value transit in their community and therefore what goals they want it to achieve in that community. So I'm also working right now in Missoula and Flagstaff, which are bigger than Grants Pass, but similar kind of agricultural, recreational, it's the climate communities.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel's working in tiny Escalon, California, and also managing the redesign of the entire bus network for Dublin, Ireland. So he takes the cake for differences of scale in transit networks.
Dublin, Ireland?
Yes.
It's a big bus network.
Do you speak Irish?
It doesn't take that long to understand what people are saying. Actually, when I came back last time, I was hearing people speaking with an Irish accent who weren't. For a couple days to
flush
it out of your system.
So I'm going to give this presentation, meaning I'm going to talk about some high level stuff. But Daniel really knows the system, and he's worked a lot with Scott. And he knows the details. he was very much involved in the design of the alternative. So he's going to be contributing most of the technical and detailed understanding of what's going on, as, of course, Will Scott is.
So we have a meeting at 4 o'clock, which means I'd say we probably have till about 3:30 to give the board.
Okay.
It's a budget meeting for 2 hours, so we need
okay.
a little bit of release.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So no longer than
I think I have 36 slides, so that might be just right for a presentation and some discussion.
Great.
Okay. Do you see it yet?
I do not.
Oh. Well, I can also thumb drive it over. T. Wharton at Co. Josephine ORUS.
It might go to the junk folder, which we don't get home tomorrow. If you've got a thumb drive, you can.
Well, if all else fails, since you have copies of the report in front of you, you can just do that.
Jump drive.
This isn't the same report.
This is the her presentation is based on the report
on
that I sent you.
I literally can see it.
So, Michelle?
We have a jump drive, thumb drive.
We do have the they do have the report.
Okay,
granted, it's not your presentation.
Well, also, we're a small enough group. Maybe I'll just do it on this little screen, and that'll be fine.
Okay.
You will have seen everything in here already if you've looked at the pictures of the report.
Because I can pull that report up.
The presentation works better because it's in a particular sequence. Okay, so we'll just do it on my screen.
Okay.
Thank you for the effort to deal with this surprise request. I appreciate it.
Not, I have a thumb drive in my office I can grab.
This is better. Let's do this.
Okay.
So we want to cover two big things. One is a little summary of existing conditions, how transit is currently performing in the county and in the city. And then the other is to highlight the key choices that have come up in this plan, some of which can go to you for policy guidance, depending on your level of interest in giving policy guidance on them. Not right now, but later. We are also, as Scott mentioned, having a stakeholder workshop on Saturday to consult with some stakeholders, and then we'll be doing a web survey of the larger community. So those are the ways we'll be getting input on those key choices, but we want you to understand them, you know, right from the start.
Cool.
Before we start consulting people about them. So
who's in your stakeholders, coming to your stakeholder meeting?
My STAC committee members, RCC,
is
sending three people, City of Grants Pass, Leslie Orr from the Bike and Ped Commission from Grants Pass is going to be there. And off the top of my head, that's all I can think of. So it's a pretty big, pretty decent-sized group. So we're looking at about 12 people at this point.
And if you think of someone at the very last minute who ought to be in the room for that stakeholder conversation?
We did reach out to the chamber. I reached out to So Ready. Yes, there should be five.
Do you have one for Commissioner Hare? There we go. Mm-hmm. I'll use this one
until
we're done and I'll give it to
you. I don't need one.
Okay,
so this is a map of your existing transit network, and it has some dots on it that show boardings, and the size of the dots indicates how many people get on and off the bus there. Some of the boardings represent a unique trip, and some of them represent somebody essentially changing buses at that spot. So they might board a bus twice, actually, to make a single one-way trip.
Mm-hmm.
And the routes are color-coded by frequency, so the green routes come once an hour, and the blue routes come every half hour. What is not quite so clear on this particular page, but is a little clearer in the other map that's in your report, is how much of the system is actually one-way loops. And I don't know how much experience you have riding the system to diverse locations, but the one-way loops actually make it fairly complicated.
I'm pretty sure I've read every route except for Wolf Creek.
Here's the key. Have you transferred between them?
Mm-hmm.
You have. Okay. So do you want to talk just a little bit about how it currently functions and some of the sort of less visible features?
No,
of the
I have not transferred between them.
Okay.
So the way the system works, there are four routes that are basically city routes in Grants Pass. There are three kind of long-distance routes. There's Cape Junction, Wolf Creek, and Medford, basically. And then the four city routes really operate in this sort of very tight, coordinated way. So the kind of the main line is really Route 10, which operates up and down 99 and then across the river and then via
Redwood Avenue.
Yeah, via Redwood Avenue to
RCC,
and on the way back swings by the hospital. And then one thing that's important to note about that is that it only actually hits the hospital and medical center in one direction. Other things that are going on, so the second most frequent route is Route 35, which basically goes from downtown to Walmart Fred Meyer out at the east end of town. And then there are routes 20 and 40, which are hourly. Route 40 is actually, what happens is on the hour, Route 35 and Route 10 and Route 20 all get here at Ambassador on the hour. And then Route 35 actually starts out as Route 40, goes around the West End, comes back 10 minutes later, and then goes back out as Route 35. And so you have these three routes that are all leaving at the same time, and then they meet again at various places along the way to help people basically get to where they're going with time transfers. So Route 10 goes down, crosses the river, and then gets to Ringgit. And then if one wanted to go across Redwood Highway, there's a time transfer there with Route 20, which is also following a similar path at that point. So you get from Route 10 to Route 20 to cross. Then Route 10 continues, comes back. There is a time transfer by the Walgreens that's happening. And then there is another time transfer with Route 35 outbound up here by the Safeway that's just a few blocks over from here. Meanwhile, Route 20 has gone once, started on the hour up here at Ambassador, went down 99, crosses the river, crosses Redwood Highway, and it picks up people from Route 10 and then goes all the way out Rogue River Highway to Royal View. And it does this thing where it kind of extends the area that it's reaching to by coming down Fruitdale Avenue in one direction. On the way back, it comes by via Rogue River Highway. And then when it comes back across the river, it reaches into these residential neighborhoods that are by the Rogue River on the east side, and then takes them around to Fred Meyer. So one thing that's notable...
Go up the backside? Is it go M Street to Agnes and then back the backside on F Street?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the reason that this matters is the ride to and from key locations often involves a massive S-curve detour.
Yeah.
You know, so there's very low linearity in this network, except on, you know, basically the most frequent route, north-south. That's a very linear path. People feel like they're, you know, going in a straight line.
Well, and what might work one way doesn't work another.
There you go.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
Like, I took it for a little while, leaving the courthouse and going, and I live on Fruitdale.
Yeah.
It takes me 15 minutes to drive. It took me 18 minutes to ride the bus.
Yeah.
But it took me 50 minutes to take the bus coming from Fruitdale over here because it goes all the way over to Walmart.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it burns time, so it makes sure that it's here on time. I mean, sometimes if it's ahead of schedule and stuff, and it's like, that's, you know, it still takes me 15 minutes, but
so
I can't do three times as long to take that. So
you discovered something about one-way loops. One-way loops we sometimes call symbolic transit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they actually do serve a function, but their function is not to get high ridership.
Mm-hmm.
Because what a one-way loop does is it offers you possibly a short trip going there in exchange for a very long trip coming back,
mm-hmm.
or vice versa. You always do the full way around the loop in your daily round trip.
Yep.
But when you have one-way loops connecting with each other, then it becomes really complicated. Because
this is, like you put
you ride
in 20,
one way, then this connection, you know, might be, you know, you go the other way at certain times, and then for your return trip, you make the connection in actually a different place. You may be a different part of the network. So
one-ways make
complex.
It very simple for users that are not accustomed to transit. So I can see like I wouldn't say a low education, but a low experience transit user might be okay with the one-ways. It's simple. You know, you're always getting on the 20, and you're going to get there eventually.
eventually.
So
yeah, I have the impression that the drivers do a lot to help users navigate the
system.
The drivers understand
how
the complexity,
yeah.
So they're sort of coaches and brokers and helping.
And they're on the radio, and they're saying, "I've got this."
They're actually counselors, bartenders, and stuff.
Yeah. But there's the other thing about that is that the way the system works is it's trying to make sure that there's always a way from point A to point B from any part of town,
yeah.
And sometimes that will take the time that'll take because of the one ways. But as a result, you've got multiple places where there are these very specifically timed connections that are basically happening because of constant radio communication.
Mm-hmm.
You've got here, you've got Ringette right across from the bus depot, you've got Walgreens over here, you've got the Safeway, there's a little point over here, there's Ambassador obviously up here, and the thing about that that's also important to remember is that basically every added timed transfer that you're introducing between multiple routes means that the whole network is more dependent on traffic conditions always being reliable.
Yeah.
And so there's more possible points where that can break down.
Yeah. So time transfers are a really important tool in the transit toolbox. Time transfers are how you take low-frequency routes and cause them to work together as a network. So, you know, people, if someone lives on a single bus route, they might think, well, I can now go places that are on that bus route. But can they go places that are on the network that that route is a part of? If they're on a low-frequency bus route and it just crosses paths with another low-frequency bus route, that random transfer is going to take a long time. And so they probably wouldn't use those two routes together as a network. But if you can time the transfer so the buses arrive at the same time, then you're actually offering more of a network. And so that's why time transfers are so valuable, and they are used so often in low frequency networks like this one. But the trouble is they're very, very delicate. You know, if you get congestion that slows down the bus or any kind of unexpected delay, it'll break that time transfer.
And so many of these are influenced by the South Y congestion.
Yes.
That really is starting now at 3 and going till 6.
Yeah.
And so escaping that at, it's not Ringette, it's whatever that road is.
It is
terrible
Ringette.
With names. Is it Ringette? I'm terrible with names. Louis Ringette ran against my grandfather, who ran for commissioner in 62, but very few.
And Louis Avenue connects with Ringette.
This is the history.
No hard feelings.
So, no, I'm still trying to get over it, but whatever.
So that's something to know about time transfers, is that, you know, they're a really important tool, but they can be kind of stretched to the breaking point where they become
brittle. On your time transfers, is there a time that how long the bus stays there? Because, I mean, if you've got two buses that come together,
mm-hmm.
and a guy goes, okay, I'm going to go jump on this one, and he's just pulling out of
yep.
this one, pulling in, that isn't a transfer.
They radio ahead and ask, does anybody need a transfer at blah, blah, blah to Route 10? And so they'll tell the bus driver, yes, you need to wait, or no, I don't have anybody who needs to transfer, so you can go. It's pretty cool.
It's interacting with
the
driver.
That's a big deal.
And that's the kind of thing that works at a small scale.
Yes.
You cannot get much bigger than you are and still maintain that. That starts to fall apart.
Right.
We call it kind of bespoke.
Well, there's people on their headphones just anticipating a transfer, and they didn't hear it. And so then they're having to wait for an hour.
Yeah. So in larger systems, they would schedule 2 or 3 minutes to sit together,
mm-hmm.
and that would just be scheduled every single time.
Yeah.
But they might not get on the horn.
Right.
And those larger systems are also running at a higher frequency, so if you don't make that transfer, it's not as significant. Whereas here, if those transfers aren't made, like Commissioner Harris said, you could be waiting up to an hour. So while we don't have any set time in stone saying it will be 7 minutes, and then we do it basically almost on a case-by-case basis.
If there's anybody there for the transfer, it's something.
Right. If there's no one there, they move on.
And that's how they make up time in the route. If traffic does happen, they made up 5 minutes, and so they got 5 minutes to burn or whatever.
Well, no matter what you do, you go better than the airlines, so keep that.
Well, and I lived in Seattle for 7 years, so I commuted from Shoreline to downtown Seattle, did the underground buses. I've taken the bus from my home in Edmonds to downtown, where I caught a train to Eugene to come to Grants Pass, and I lived on the buses daily, so it's just one of those things. I went from big city bus to this, and so poor Scott has had to put up with me kind of saying, hey, can we get to Medford? Hey, can we do this? Can we do a Williams Highway? Can we do a, you know, and I have a big wish list, but I come from a very robust system that serves millions of people.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I think the thing we can say is that the system of time transfers has definitely built your ridership to date, and it is pretty much at breakpoint, like in terms of its ability to like consistently function
and accommodate more ridership.
Right.
Working with Scott is we need more people to be on this and a broader community. And there's people out there who want to, and they just introducing a rural community to the transit system is a big hurdle. But he always is saying, I want to move slowly, because if it starts to break down, you get a couple shots at this. And if it doesn't pan out for that person, they're turned off to transit forever, possibly. It's like, oh, I tried it in my town, it didn't work. We're all different.
So we want to share some data with you that is in the report about the productivity of both the local routes and the intercity routes. Productivity is how many riders get on the bus for each hour that the bus is out there. Because really what the costs of transit are mostly related to the time that the bus is out there. And so if you're thinking about bang for buck, mm-hmm. that's riders per hour. It's a great measure for that. So that's productivity. So one thing that you see in this chart is that this vertical axis is productivity. How much bang for the buck in terms of riders. This x-axis is how many trips on the route each day, by which I mean bus trips, how much frequency, essentially, is out there on that route. And the routes that have the most trips per day, the most frequency, which are routes 10 and 35, are also the most productive.
Sure.
And then the routes that have fewer trips per day, routes 20 and 40, moderately productive. And then the routes that have the fewest, Route 80 and then Route 50 and RVCL, the commuter line, are the least productive, with just fairly small numbers of people on the bus for each trip. So in this community, there's a very clear relationship between higher frequency service and higher ridership. And not just higher ridership in total, but actually higher ridership per hour of service that you're putting out there. So the more you put out there, the more riders you're getting on for each hour. And this is not isolated to Josephine County. This is actually very observable and documented in communities of every scale. This is the same chart, but for about 24 other cities, big and small. And you can see that as you get higher frequency, by moving left, higher frequency, you get higher productivity. So we can all understand intuitively why this would be so. If you don't have to wait 40 minutes to get to your job and it's a 5-minute drive, if you have to wait 40 minutes, it's a 5-minute drive, you're either going to use the car you have or work pretty hard to get a car so that you don't have to do the 40-minute wait.
As you increase frequency, of course, you're going to get more riders. It almost has to happen. Because people get used to the fact of where that bus goes all of a sudden it becomes more handy. If it's not handy, they're not going to do it.
There we go. Handy. That's a great way to describe it. The only caveat is you can increase frequency, and if you increase it in a place where there just aren't very many people, then it doesn't matter that it's handy. You won't get more riders.
I'm looking at your 10 and then comparing it to this map that has the little, how many people you pick up. It looks like 10, most of the people you pick up, and very few out on Redwood Avenue, in fact, hardly any. And your last opportunity to pick people up, it looks like it's out on Marine Gap. Pick up most of them at the courthouse, and then the next big batch is at Marine Gap.
So the two really big batches on Route 10 are the courthouse and Rogue Community College.
And I think, so what you'll see when we get to we have a pair of service alternatives to show you, one that will get higher ridership and one that probably wouldn't. And I think what you'll see is that those big places where people get on the bus a lot right now are the places where there would be more frequency if you want to get higher ridership.
Right.
So once I get to those, I think you'll recognize that pattern.
But those loops, you guys are maybe making a recommendation to change some of our loops?
We're not making a recommendation yet, but we are going to show you some alternatives. So I was just talking about productivity in terms of frequency. Your more frequent services are more productive. But it's also good to know what's the historical trend, what's been going on recently. This is a graph showing productivity over the last
5 years, or for four of the last 5 years, from 2012 through 2015. And here's what these three colors are. The orange is your local bus, so that's within town. The green is the commuter buses, and then blue is dial-a-ride service. So local buses actually become a bit more productive over that time period. More, for every hour of service that is funded and put on the street, a few more people are coming in the door. Mm-hmm. So that's good news. Commuter bus, slightly less productive, and dial-a-ride has stayed flat.
And does Wolf Creek, Cave Junction, and Medford all come under commuter bus? Or okay.
They do.
Yes.
Over the same time period, costs have changed.
Okay.
So this is the trend of your costs, but it's not just total costs, it's cost per service hour. So for every unit of service that you put out there, every hour of bus service, what does it cost to put it out? And you can see that costs for commuter bus are highest of all, but you know, we're staying mostly flat. Costs for local bus are flat, declining just a little bit at the end of this period, and then costs for dial-a-ride are going up.
Right, and for the dial-a-ride, that's pretty much all mandated ADA paratransit that you essentially have no choice but to provide.
Yeah, that's correct.
The cost went up, but we also are going to start billing higher for that as well with the state, because we approved that a month ago, right?
Right, but that's only a small portion of
so
the rides.
So it's still not covering, okay.
So we do make ground, but then, you know, then there's just trips that we have no control over. So that's people, I mean, if 100 people call tomorrow, mm-hmm. we got to do 100 rides.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas some of that state ride or the state subsidized rides, we're recovering our costs, but those rides in comparison to everything else isn't a large enough percentage to really offset. But there's been some things done, so you can see as it's slightly gone down.
Yeah.
And then how does this community compare to peers in terms of service you're providing and what you're getting for it? This chart shows investment, which is annual hours of service per capita. So how much just quantity, how much service are you just putting on the road relative to the population here? And among these peers, Grants Pass is about third. This is Albany, Carson City, Nevada, Bend, Longview, Walla Walla, and Port Angeles. Grants Pass is the just barely the smallest of these, I think. Is that right? But pretty even with a couple of these peers in terms of population. So, you know, moderate investment relative to these other peers. And then relevance is also a per capita measure. That's annual boardings per capita. How much ridership do we get relative to our population? And that's quite low. Grants Pass is the lowest among these peers. So this is a way, of, you know, you can almost think of this as like, how likely is it that someone I know in my life uses the bus? Or how likely is it that someone at that business uses the bus? Rides per capita per year is sort of a good measure of that. How relevant is transit to the life of this community? And finally, among peers, productivity. How many boardings per hour are these peers getting out of their system? And again, we see Grants Pass is the lowest. So Grants Pass
isn't... Does that mean they get on the bus and they... I mean, if you were boarding to go from here to the bridge...
Mm-hmm. It counts once.
Yeah. But if you're also going from here to Road Community College, that counts
also
once.
Counts once.
Here to Medford is once.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, the longer your trips, the less boarding you're going to have. Right?
That's right. Yeah. So actually, sometimes when you want to measure how long-distance services are performing, you don't use boardings per service hour. You use a different measure, which is called passenger miles, which is how many passengers times how many miles.
Do you count those again in a transfer? In other words,
yes.
If I transfer?
So this is counting some people twice. That's right. So actually, if we were... But of course, in these peer cities, they're also counting people twice. It's consistent across all the peers. But there's another way to do this, which is trips. But then you have to collect all this extra data about exactly how people are making their trips and where do they transfer and so on.
Well, we only have three transfers. So if I look at Walla Walla, Washington, and they have 16 transfers, they're going to have quite a few more boardings,
the
right?
Number of transfer locations is less a predictor of how much people transfer than the way the network functions.
Okay.
So I can't tell you offhand which, you know, how you compare.
Well, I just look at us as having three transfers and count those twice because they wouldn't mm-hmm. get counted twice.
Yeah.
If you had more transfers, it's going to look better on that
That's
chart.
That's right. That's absolutely
so
right.
You know, compared to Albany. Does Albany have a whole bunch of transfers and we don't?
Yeah, Albany actually does some time transfers with some low-frequency buses. Okay. They do.
I would like to point out, though, that one of the bigger impacts on this in terms of boardings per service hours, if you look at our service, so we have three long commuter routes that have very low productivity versus what's going on in town.
Well, like the Redwood Avenue spur out there.
Right.
You have boardings out at the college, and you have boardings in town. You have very few boardings. In fact, the dots are there. There's one dot there, I think, out about Dowell Road, somewhere along in there, that shows that people are getting on that Redwood Avenue thing. But, it's minimal.
Well, and I can tell you that for out here, where this line comes back up, Hubbard Road, this is a long block. So you have a stop out here, you have a stop over here, but someone over here, they're walking a mile to get there on it. It's not like a city block where you can catch it more frequency kind of thing. Or I don't know how. It seems like we have more closely connected stops in town. And then you get out on Redwood and they're kind of far.
About every quarter mile.
And so then once you get over here, because I have options, people live in a boarding house right up here off of this end, and that's one of the things that I haven't been able to get them to ride because they're walking so far to the highway, have to cross the highway to get over to the bus stop. So it's just, it impacts that handiness that you mentioned.
But I've been talking about ridership relative to cost, productivity. It is not a given that ridership is the purpose of the system. It is not a given that the reason the system exists is to get high ridership at all. So we always say, if you want higher ridership, that's why the if is huge, if you want higher ridership, and if you therefore want higher fare box return or lower subsidy per passenger, which are things that go along with that, then you would run service in certain ways, in certain places, and that the way you would do that is what we call the ridership recipe. You would follow the ridership recipe. Now, this is how ridership happens.
What are the alternatives to having ridership be the priority? It would be serving low-income populations or handicapped?
The alternative
serving everyone.
The alternative would be geographic coverage, making sure that you've got a little bit of service close to everybody, no matter where they live. That's the alternative.
Okay.
Yeah. And some of those people would be handicapped, some of those people would be low income, but you're really concerned with making sure you're in all the nursing communities.
You're defeating the purpose. If you work on strictly ridership alone, you're defeating the purpose of public transportation, which is making it available to a larger group of people.
Well, this is the very policy debate we are hoping you have, and so you're obviously ready for it.
We are excited. I don't know that I'd subscribe to that
100%. Okay.
Sweet, it's going to be a debate. Can I, get popcorn and watch?
Wait, let me get a striped shirt and whistle out here.
So, when people come and talk to you about ridership and transit, if they say things to you like, we should be not subsidizing transit, or we should not have low subsidy per passenger, or, fares should be covering more of the cost of transit, things like that, they are unwittingly saying, high ridership is my priority. Because you only get those things through high ridership. When people come to you and also say, I want less congestion, I want more job access, I want reduced air pollution or reduced transportation costs, they're also basically saying, I want high transit ridership. Because those are also things you only get from high ridership. You don't get those things from just the presence of a bus line. You get those things from people actually using the bus line. But ridership isn't just under the control of the transit agency. Ridership arises from a four-legged stool, the transit service, but also the land use, the street design and the management of the streets, and then the pricing. The pricing of the transit, but also the pricing of the alternatives, like how much does it cost to drive, how much does it cost to park. So the ridership recipe is high all-day frequency, frequent service, because it's handy, but not deployed just anywhere, deployed where you have patterns of density, walkability, linearity, and proximity. And I will talk about each of those in turn. Walkability relates to what you just described with the Redwood Highway, not being able to cross it. Frequency is what we call a cubed benefit, so it provides three distinct benefits to the transit rider. One is it's handy, you go when you want to go. And, even if you don't need to, your bus comes once an hour, say. You're not going to go stand at the bus stop for 55 minutes and wait for your bus, but you go out a little bit before it's coming. But that doesn't mean you don't still have a really long wait, because a bus that comes once an hour whether it's the first bus you get on or the second. What it actually forces you to do is it forces you to get to work or get to school when the bus gets to work or school, not when you want to get to work or school. So if you imagine that you have a work shift that starts at 8 a.m., the hourly bus goes past your workplace at 8:10 a.m. So you're forced to make a choice between being 10 minutes late or 50 minutes early. You're going to be 50 minutes early. And that's what low frequency does, is it doesn't let you go when you want to go. Even if you're not waiting at the stop, you're waiting in your life. You're not where you want to be when you want to be there in your life. So that's the first part of the cube benefit. The second part is that you can actually make transfers between multiple routes without delicate time transfer arrangements and without a terribly long wait. So it turns individual routes into a network where people can use multiple routes without too much difficulty. The third thing it does is it offers reliability, because if something happens to your bus, like it breaks down, there's another one coming soon. Whereas if your bus only comes once an hour, if something happens to your bus, there's another one coming an hour later. So that's why frequency is so powerful. And we focus on it. Speed is important too, as is directness, you know, not riding in a long circle. But frequency is so undervalued because there's really no proxy for it in driving or even walking or cycling. You know, the only when we drive, we don't experience anything like frequency. We always get to go when we want to go. So it's really important to understand how important frequency is for ridership.
Another thing that I would, if and when, and I promise someday they'll take my driver's license away and I'll have to ride public transportation, is not when is it going to go, but where is it going to go? Does it go where I want to go?
Oh, yeah. I don't think it's near your house, so don't worry. You get a walk.
Well, we have dial ride service that goes 3/4 of a mile outside.
I'm looking at the dial ride.
Yeah, okay. You'll be safe.
He's got to stop not too far from his house.
The other thing is that the shorter the trip, the more frequency contributes to your travel time. So when you're going to, like, Ashland or Medford, you know, it's not a big deal to plan your... Am I pointing the wrong way? Thank you. South.
That was Cape Junction.
It's not a big deal to plan your life around a bus that doesn't come that often, but if you're just going a mile and a half down the road, psychologically, it's very different to wait an hour for a bus. Yeah. And if you're only going to be in the bus for 6 minutes, but the bus comes every hour, well, gosh, your waiting time is far more than your time in the bus.
Well, and for some people, the alternative to being able to walk it, I know that when I was living in D.C., if I can walk it in the same amount of time mm-hmm. I wait in the trip, I'll just walk it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep.
Which is a bad thing. I don't think that's...
But that's the thing. You're describing kind of another facet of this, which is for really short trips, it's very hard to be frequent enough to compete with walking. In walkable
places. Especially with those loops. There's no short trips in the loops.
Right. So, the ridership recipe. Density. How many people are going to and from the area around each stop? Density is a scary word because it has all kinds of like urban connotations, but it's actually just a mathematical principle. In a fixed area, how much stuff is there? And your bus stop is always going to serve a fixed area, so how many people are within walking distance of that bus stop is always going to determine the basic potential for ridership. So density is the first element. Walkability is the second. Can people actually walk to and from the bus stop? What you're describing on Redwood Highway is key. Can people walk across the road so that they can access service not just going that way, but also going that way? Because even if they get on the bus going that way, they're going to get dropped off on the other side of the highway. So they have to be able to get back across. Linearity, big factor here. Can people travel on transit in straight lines that are useful to through riders? Or do they need to ride through long deviations to cover lots of places? These are both discouraging for riders, but they're also expensive. Because in transit, you pay for time, and time is used to cover distance, and the longer you have to do this to reach a certain number of people, the more you're spending, basically, on that service.
So do we move the church? Remove the church and the housing development.
This is why land use is so important. What you do is churches are only going to locate on hills, but you try to keep things from locating down cul-de-sacs because that forces this very unlinear transit pattern. Or for locating in out of, sometimes community colleges or medical centers will move to a very out of the way location that is not on the way to anything else, and now the bus has to add a half a mile to its trip.
Cheap property.
Has to cut its frequency in order to add that distance. and then fewer people ride it. So this is why land use matters so much, because if you can get things to locate in a linear pattern, then you can surf them with transit very easily. It's not transit's fault. This is not transit's fault, right? Transit agency wasn't asked about where these things should be located. And finally, proximity, which is also about cost. The farther things are away, the more it costs to get there, the lower frequency you can offer for any given operating budget, because distance is time and time is money. So that's the ridership recipe. But, as you brought up, is ridership what you want? And that is an open question. We are not here to tell you that you should have higher ridership. We're not here to recommend a high ridership network. We are here to highlight this trade-off. Because this is a trade-off that's really about community values. And it's really not about our values. It's about the values of this community, the priorities here. And it arises in any fixed budget. Anytime you have a fixed budget, you get faced with this trade-off. And do we ever not have a fixed budget?
Yes, we have a declining budget, not a fixed budget.
Well, then the trade-off becomes even more severe. So maximizing ridership, and with it fare box return, requires thinking more like a business. Businesses choose which markets they enter. They don't just distribute their product willy-nilly. They think about where their product is competitive. And when they enter those markets, they expect their product to succeed there for very specific reasons.
Yeah.
And this is not at all the same as meeting people's needs or expectations. So McDonald's does not locate McDonald's because there are expectations of a McDonald's or because there are people who need a McDonald's. They locate a McDonald's in places where they think a McDonald's is going to succeed. Actually, they franchise one of those places. So if you want a high ridership transit network, it means thinking a little bit more like a business and a little bit less like a social service. And that doesn't mean it's the right thing to do, but that's the trade-off. So here's a little fictional example before we talk about Grants Pass specifically. Imagine we have a transit agency in this little fictional urban area. It's about the size of this one. There are lots of tiny little dots in this drawing, and those dots are residents and jobs. And as you can see, they are clustered around these two main roads. These are probably like the old state highways. And then there are these other streets that don't go as directly through and have much less activity on them, but there's still a few people living on them still. Like, you know, there's a call center out here probably, and there's a clinic out here, and otherwise it's housing. And this transit agency has 18 buses to deploy each day. So the question is, how should they design their transit network? And they may go to their city council and say, we've started a transit district. How do you want us to design the transit network? And the city council might say, we want you to get as much ridership as you can. Low subsidy per passenger, high ridership, good environmental outcomes, good business outcomes. And they say, okay, well then we would run the transit system like this. We would maximize ridership. We put all 18 of our buses on just two routes. And we put those two routes on the major streets where there are the most people and the most jobs, so that every bus stop has as many people as possible walking distance to it, and they're actually able to cross the highway and get to the stop. And because each of these routes has so many buses on it, the bus is always coming soon. The frequency is really high. They have focused their service, and as a result, they get frequency. And they would come back to their city council, and they would brag about this network by saying it would be extremely productive. We will get really high ridership relative to the cost. But of course, the city council looks at this and says, oh, but what about the new call center that just opened over there? And what about Mrs. Jones, who lives down here and she has a bad back? And there's no way that she can walk four blocks to the main street to get to the bus.
That's completely abandoned her. Serve the public.
Well, which public does it serve?
City council.
It serves anyone in the public who's located on the main roads.
Or my district is right there.
Or who is willing to walk and able to walk to the main roads. And it serves people who are in a hurry, because if they walk a few blocks to the main road, then they don't have to wait, right? The bus, they can see the bus coming. But it doesn't serve people who are located away from the main roads in smaller numbers, and if they're not able or not willing to walk. So you have to think about who's the public. Right? Is the public the smaller number of people who are
left
out?
Well, and if I don't represent that district, I only represent the X. I'm in the middle.
Oh, you're in the middle.
My people are taken care of.
Oh, yeah.
But yours aren't. So the whole council isn't on the same page.
But the city council, in my fictional example, has your reaction, right? They say, wait a second, you can't abandon the people over here. They need service just like everybody else. And the transition. Well,
theoretically, they're underwriting it for everybody.
Well, they're we were on the council, the only two people that would chime in on this would be Lily and I, because we don't have any talking anyway. So our two wards would be just fine, and the rest of them would be out.
Yeah. Well, I can claim a bridge that you got built and Fairview Lane expansion that I got built.
Well, as soon as we show you the alternative maps, you can locate your wards on them, and then we'll, or your district.
We are
what
not.
Are your districts?
We're not districted now.
You don't have districts?
We're at large.
You're at large.
Then you're joking about the base center.
Well,
yeah.
They used to, okay. And I can theorize what it would be like.
But we get that at the state level all the time.
I don't know how you would divide a county into three districts anyway.
We'd have four.
Population.
We'd have four districts. We've had it before.
Okay. But, so, the fictional city council says you can't abandon these people over here and these people over here. They can't walk and they're not going to walk and they're not in a hurry. So make sure you cover everybody. You should have designed the transit network to cover everybody. Abandon nobody. Everyone needs to get equal amount of transit close to them no matter where they live. The transit agency goes off and designs this network with the same number of buses, still 18 buses, completely different goal. The goal of this network is cover everyone no matter where they live. Some service for everyone. So every street has a bus route on it, but the bus is never coming soon. Because every route is worked by just one bus and it goes a lot of other places. So by the time it gets back, an hour's gone by. And because the bus is never coming soon, ridership is low. Because it's not handy, right? And even on these main roads where you have the most people and the most jobs and you have the community college and the businesses and the Walmart and so on, it's still not coming soon. So it's not handy even though there are a lot of people there. And out here it's not handy. There aren't very many people here. But a few people, of course, will use it everywhere because there are people in need scattered thinly across entire cities and across entire
countries. In our experience, sometimes it's actually impeding the traffic that stop in the street. And there's two people on the bus or what have you. It's like, get out of our way. We're driving here, and it's not looked at as a positive contribution.
I would have taken a bus and gone to all four of those quadrants and transfer the people back to the two main lines.
Had four buses running quadrants and the rest of them on the main
lines. Yeah, four buses running the quadrants, and then the rest of them leave them on the main line and have transfers on the main line.
Yeah.
In other words, put one bus in here, going
so
right
would
in
be,
here,
that would
and
be,
he drops off people here or here.
Is that
same
a hybrid?
Thing on that side.
That would be in between. That would sort of be in between. So these would then be less frequent because you've pulled off
four buses. You're only taking four buses, and I'm counting.
But still a higher frequency.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's the
you're
in between.
Maintaining your frequency
right.
on the two main drags,
yeah.
and you're still servicing.
Which is kind of what we have.
That is exactly what you have now.
That's what we have now.
We have high frequency to RCC and Fred Meyer and low frequency to everywhere else.
So it's key to note that this is not a binary choice, which is exactly what you're describing, right? You can actually do something in the middle.
Okay.
So it's not a binary choice. You don't have to do one or do the other, but they do trade off against each other. The more you move towards one goal, the more you move away from the other. And so we emphasize that they're on a spectrum. It's not that you can only do it this way or that way. It's that the more you want high ridership, if you do things that will get you high ridership, you are doing things that are reducing your coverage. And if you do things to increase your coverage, you are doing things that will reduce your ridership. And there are really no magic technical solutions to do both at once. You just have to pick a point on the spectrum. So that's where we are with these alternatives, is whether Josephine County Transit should have, Josephine Community Transit should have higher ridership, because that would require a move away from coverage. So it may not actually be what you want, and it may not be what the community wants, but that's the question being posed. So we have two alternatives to show you that illustrate, they're kind of like, they're not as extreme as the fictional ones. They're both closer towards the middle, but they are a contrast.
That's the higher ridership.
That's the higher ridership, which I'm passing out first because it's more different from the current network.
Right.
And
are these in color?
Yeah.
Okay.
These look like Maybe a slightly earlier version, but it doesn't really change.
So color is really important.
The map hasn't changed.
So look at the ridership one. And the red lines are more frequent than any service you have today. That is a bus coming every 15 minutes. Which is this? That is the point at which people don't really need to look at the schedule anymore. Mm-hmm. You can basically just walk out to the bus stop, and by random chance, you will get a bus in less than 15 minutes. On average, you will wait 7.5 minutes for a bus, half of the frequency. And that is a frequent connection from downtown through two-way through the medical center. So instead of what it is today, which is one-way through the medical center, two-way through the medical center, and then Road Community College.
You're taking Union Avenue instead of Ringel.
We're taking, yes, that's correct.
So the key thing about going two-way through the medical center is that means the way to and from the medical center is no longer via the community college.
Or via transfer.
Or via transfer. Because that's right now there isn't really that linear service that goes through town to the medical center. And then, I mean, service to the community college is not bad right now, but this would double the frequency of service to the community college. And then you can see the rest of the network is vastly simplified. But, of course, there are places, just like in the fictional example, that would now have no service at all, at least not service within a short walk. But this is budget neutral. This is exactly the amount of service you have today, just focused into more frequent lines, fewer more frequent lines. Bus is always coming.
So you took out Bridge and G Street Loop.
Correct.
So you got Rogue River Highway.
Fruitdale and Rogue River Highway are gone.
They got M Street.
Mm-hmm. M Street's gone.
So this is your densest, biggest destinations, including dense residential areas and low-income areas, connected with the most useful transit service. In contrast, if you want to look at the high-coverage map, it's much more like today's network. Do you want to describe any changes in here?
Yeah. So the coverage alternative is basically, it's a lot like today's network, but with fewer time transfer points. So it's basically meant to hold longer in time with changing traffic conditions. But essentially, what's happening is you still have Route 1, which is basically Route 10. Although it splits over here and does, so basically every other Route 1 does the Redwood Avenue, Redwood Highway Loop in one direction, and every other one goes in the other direction. And that's because it'll take a little bit longer to get around the medical center in two directions than to go via Ringette in one direction. And then the Rogue River Highway and Bridge Street, G Street Loop are actually connected to each other, and so they operate as one route together. The G Street, Bridge Street Loop goes a little bit farther out today than today. Right now it goes by Leonard, but it'll move to Lincoln. And there's the Rogue River Highway service would be two-way on Rogue River instead of being on Fruitdale in one direction. As far as serving the whole M Street area, basically, that would be on the same route that also serves the whole Fred Meyer Walmart Greyhound area. So it's a route that would come out of downtown like this and then kind of make a long loop to make sure that it hits over here.
So, Daniel and Scott, is it accurate to say that this is the minimal change necessary to address any kind of unsustainable problems with time transfers?
Yeah, I think that's okay. A fair assumption to state that.
So you could describe this as status quo. It is a high coverage alternative because it's covering almost all of the city. It's also sort of the status quo, but with some technical changes that are really necessary for reliability.
Have we looked into William? Sorry, go ahead.
One of the bigger stops is the one over there by Dutch Brothers, Elmer.
It's the Big Lot stop.
The Big Lot stop.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that's out in your configuration here.
Well, it is.
Yes,
you're doing the one still behind Walmart.
Correct.
But the one over on Foothill, because I guess are you considering that to be a short walk over to the Walmart one?
Essentially, have to make that decision. Mm-hmm. And yes, that's exactly what would happen
no
because
matter
you
what,
can't
not
do
including
it.
Williams Highway either.
No, this is the existing service that we have now, distributed among the routes that we have now. And the reason that we looked at it that way is because I felt before we did something, let's make sure we're not taking away, or let's minimize what we're taking away from the people now. So if Williams Highway is something that is a priority, yes, that could be expanded into a higher coverage alternative where you go out there, but in doing so, you have to reduce frequency within the service that you have now.
Do you have more than one bus on Route 1?
It's two buses.
At one time?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the longest of the bunch. It goes out Royal Community College all the way to the freeway.
So you could think of it this way. So Route 1 on this has two buses. So it takes an hour. So you have 30-minute service frequency. So you could actually take that bus and put it somewhere else. You could put in a whole nother hour of service out there, but what you've done is you've reduced the frequency on that Route 1 now from 30 minutes to 1 hour.
So that's the choice. We could have drawn a higher coverage alternative, cut the frequency on Route 1 to just every hour, and put yet more routes covering more places or going farther. We could have come in with an even higher coverage alternative.
But it looks to me, on your map of usage, Route 1 is probably the most highest usage.
It is.
Absolutely. Because it has the highest frequency, and also because it goes to the big places.
And it's got three transfers on it.
And just to put that in perspective, I mean, it's 16 passengers an hour, per revenue hour. So when you looked at the system average earlier, it showed it as 9.
Route 1 is pulling most of the weight.
Right. So that's the difference. So it's almost double most of the other routes.
So I wanted to say something important here. This is not a proposal. We are not telling you should do this. We are not even recommending this. These are contrasting alternatives. They're intentionally contrasting. And we actually wanted to make them different enough so that there's some space in between them for people's opinions. So, you know, if you and the public tell us, do this, that's fine. We're not the least bit disappointed. Or if you and the public say, you know, do this, but maybe you can do something slightly different, that's also fine. So, you know, I don't want you to get the impression that we're saying the ridership alternative is something you should do. We will never use the word should if it's not in air quotes. Because should is up to you. Should is about why there's transit in the first place in this community, what values this community has for its transit system, and that's really what this question is about.
Well, I could sit here and look at this all day long, but in my mind, I rely on Scott, who's right. He's listening to people, and
you know, he lives it every day.
Yeah, that's your business. I'm going to rely on you. If you say, "Oh, we can't cut that one out there on Agnes out," then put it in. You know, if what we're doing right now works and is covering ridership and what's the other one?
Coverage.
Yeah, coverage. Then maybe we want to leave it. Is it broken?
Yes.
I mean, in the end result, is it broken? Huh?
It can be improved.
Right.
But still providing the coverage. So you don't take away the coverage, but you can improve the routes. So my question for you is, how long is this transportation plan for? This is a 20-year transportation 30, plan?
35 years.
This does not represent the growth that Grants Pass will experience in 35 years by any means whatsoever.
No. Yeah, no. This is a completely budget neutral. This part of it is a short-term budget neutral.
So that's why I'm asking, how long does this cover? Because to me, I already know there's an issue with not getting coverage out Williams Highway, and there's probably going to need to be more out. I mean, obviously, Redwood had the highest growth for a while, but if we look at our felony flats and our areas that we're going to have the poorest populations and the people less likely to have a car, it's going to be Rover Highway. And the growth in the urban growth boundary, where are those areas that the housing in a plan is going? And so if this is supposed to cover 35 years, I don't think we are going
to
be earning.
I think the real question then is, you know, how does the service quantity grow? You're saying we should improve the routes and keep the coverage and expand the coverage, which mathematically can only happen if you increase the budget. So if you want a higher service quantity, then, and this the plan will discuss some of the issues around this, then there needs to be more funding for transit.
Well, the thing that's always stuck in my, it always is very interesting to me, at no point, and I didn't see it anywhere in the report, where you say you go from $1 or $2 to $4. it's always how can Josephine County subsidize this to improve?
From the fare, you mean?
The rate side.
The fares paid by passengers.
Yeah. Yeah.
How much? So generally, fares cover between probably 8% and 20% of transit operating.
Right. But how can you make that? How can you make that matrix change a little bit?
So you'll never get above
$4 to ride. $4 to ride the bus from Cave Junction to Bedford.
Right. Are you interested in raising money to pay for more transit, or are you interested in pricing that feels more fair?
I would like to raise money to offset whatever. Because here's what we right now.
So she did mention that, and that's the frequency one. So you increase the frequency. It was the first.
We're losing some CMAQ dollars, mm-hmm. some pretty serious CMAQ dollars, because Salem and Kaiser all of a sudden came on board and decided they've got air pollution problems. So now they take a big chunk out of CMAQ.
I can't imagine.
Almost 25% out of CMAQ funds. So we normally could have, you know, worked into Scott's deal, because that's exactly what he's for. I'm waiting for him to say, hey, you know, there isn't that much air quality problems in Josephine County anymore, so let's kind of trim you down and move that into someplace where there is. I'm waiting for that to happen. So far, I haven't seen anybody say, you know, hey, because we just got our deal back for Josephine County for Middle Road MPO. We've met our 2025 air quality standards. Nobody else in the state has. We've already done it. And I don't know whether that's going to affect it. Hey, why should we give it to them? Because unless you could convince them that you have to maintain that, that it's a maintenance thing, that we have to continue to get those CMAQ dollars to maintain that level.
Well, that's definitely something that we can look at. This report is the existing conditions and what we're looking at with today's budget and that kind of thing and where we're going to go. So to get to the other point in terms of Williams Highway and some other areas that might go out there, yeah, we can identify areas of service demand into the future, and then it just becomes a budgetary issue. How do you get out there?
Williams Highway and Newell Road and that area out there are probably going to be able to be reached a lot easier when Allen Creek Road cuts through.
But there's no transit in the plan.
No.
Well, this is the existing conditions. So this isn't like 20 years out. And with that said, I mean, we can say, hey, this is where we're going to want to go. This is where we're going to prioritize our resources. That can be part of this plan. But what this is dealing with is what we're looking at today. So if you push this out 35 years from now, what I would expect is to say, these are the areas that we know that there's going to be demand for service, and leave it at that. And then we got to come up with the idea of how we're going to service them.
Well, that's a 40-year plan up there on the right-hand side. The 10 years for the urban reserve outside the urban growth boundary for 30. So you've got everything, and it's not going to change so substantially geographically that you're going to say, oh, we have a new road that we're going to have to put in here. I mean, it's Williams, it's Redwood, it's Rogue River, and 6th and 7th Street. I mean, those are the thoroughfares. We've got those fairly well defined. I think what I'd like to see is I like my cake and eat it, too, just the way Commissioner DeYoung is really aspiring, is it's good coverage and it's high ridership. And so we achieve good coverage adopting a plan like this, and we increase ridership by advertising its opportunities and its frequency, and you get that revenue increase by the numbers of users on a good system that applies to a majority of the community.
What are you pointing out when you say a plan like
the,
this?
The streamlined
the coverage.
It's not titled the same on your presentation.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So I mean, it's what we have here, and Scott and I have talked about this for, you know, 6 years, I guess, is getting to a point where he feels comfortable with the system being able to accommodate an increase in ridership. This system is designed for a current ridership or the extremes, because there's going to be some challenges with the transfers and stuff like you were talking about. You're not going to be able to accommodate if you increase ridership on our current system, as an example, too much more.
I wouldn't expect this to increase ridership very much.
But I would like to try to
increase. So I don't think you're going to have a problem
accommodating. But
right.
Cake and eat it too. Well, this system that applies to a broad geographic spectrum,
mm-hmm.
and then we let people know.
Yeah,
but also increase frequency on some of those loops. You might get more ridership out of them.
Unfortunately, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but you can't really have the cake and eat it too in this situation. you can absolutely run an excellent high coverage network with
but you can influence your spectrum.
You can do great advertising. You can run really high quality service. It will never get as high of ridership as if you were deploying your service in a different way. So there's no question there's great excellence to be had in a high coverage network. But I would not be doing my job if I let people think you could also increase your ridership substantially through things like advertising. It just doesn't happen. Because we can all know about the service that comes once an hour, but if we have any choice at all about how we travel and we're in a hurry, we're not going to use it if it comes once an hour, right? Or we're not going to use it very often. And that math doesn't actually change when, you know, just because it's well marketed or even very, I mean, systems can be incredibly well maintained and handsome and clean and really, really excellently run and still not get high ridership. And that's okay, because they're not designed for high ridership.
So the what I think perhaps what you're describing in terms of cake and eat it too is where you have this, but also two or three of the lines are red instead of being blue or green.
Yeah.
And that's also fine. It's just that that implies a different level of resource commitment.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So the have your cake and eat it too scenario is X more dollars for service. It's within a fixed budget, there is no cake and eat it too. But if you're growing the budget without sprawling the city out too much, because that ends up consuming the budget just for more low-frequency coverage services. But if you're growing the budget even as the city fills in, then, yeah, you can have your cake and eat it, too.
Which, based on that map right there, the city isn't expanding radically, so it's...
No.
There is a space in which that could happen. It is a space that does require finding new sources.
One of the things that the plan will discuss, which is about the long term, not about the short term, is funding. Because this level of, I mean, it is a small and declining level of funding that forces this choice to be difficult. But if, you know, if people don't want to make this choice, essentially, if they want high ridership, if they want frequent service to the community college, and coverage in many, many parts of the city, then they may naturally say, well, we should spend more on transit because we obviously don't have enough because we want to do this and this. In fact, there's very simple math, which is just this map plus this map equals the network that does it all. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't fit in the existing budget at all.
I'm going to ask the question here, and you're going to hate my guts for this, but given all the trips and all the people that ride the bus, what percentage of our total population is that? We're looking at a cost to the taxpayer, not all taxpayers, to handle a very, very small group of people that ride the bus.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what percentage of your population uses transit.
Maybe we don't want to know that number.
I think it's fair to ask. And if I'm going to guess,
we're in the discussion mode of this, but I don't think it's something that I would ask you in
a public forum. Yeah, if I was going to guess, I'd say probably about 10% of the population is using the service. But then I would also, I guess,
I'd say that's really strong.
It is. But then I would also say that there's other benefits to public transportation other than that person that's actually just riding.
He could say 10% of the population is affected by the users of the transportation. Even if there's a smaller percentage that's using it, that's an employee they get to have. That's a unencumbered traffic in front of them. That's a meeting a air quality standard by 2025 and 2017. That number goes up the more things you put into that basket. If it was not there,
Well, you're absolutely right, and that's the bigger outcome: is how are we helping other things? I've never used our transit system, but I have printed hundreds of the schedules and gone over them with a vast amount of parole and probationers in this community, and showing them how to use it, and showing them this is what time you'd want to cash to be here by in time, and you can catch this bus there to get here, and working through the routes like your driver's done. I did that almost daily. And so I found that it was an issue because of Cave Junction and the frequency of when those, and so when they added another route, that helped.
Right.
But when I got someone who needs to be on work crew and the bus doesn't arrive till 8 and they have to be checked in before that, what do? Okay, we take out this barrier, but I've spent a lot of time with your schedules, but I've never written your system. But I referred all, met a lot of people, and that's where it comes into play, is how many people can we get writing that is impacting a job? Or, you know, the other two things I've talked to you about that are also issues is that we stop at 6 o'clock and we don't go on the weekends. And, you know, for me, if I was a student at RCC, I'm taking night classes. I get done with class, I can't get home.
Right.
And so we have issues of not having evening ridership. We have issues of not having weekend ridership or early enough for a certain job. So there's still things affecting our ridership. And if we expand it, it means we do invest more, but would our return on investment actually increase? If we got a Williams Highway route, or instead of making three go Rogue River Highway, then Bridge, having one that does Rogue River Highway frequently, and having one that does Bridge and G Street frequently, and one that does Walmart frequently, and not sending them on multiple loops, but just having them do faster loops, we might increase our ridership. But that takes more resource.
That's exactly right.
So you didn't ask for a specific decision.
No, I wanted to have the opportunity to present this and kind of get everyone thinking about what's going on, and it will come back.
Okay.
So thank you.
Is there anything that you expected us to tell you about or share with you that you didn't hear? Because, you know, we're actually around all day tomorrow and can certainly follow up with answers on other topics if you're interested in anything else.
Do you need any of us to come on Saturday?
I mean, you're more than welcome to be there.
I think it would be great to have one of you there, to be in the room and hear it in person.
I'm available, but I don't know if you want to be because you're liaison.
It'll be fun also.
I'm willing.
Play a game.
Okay, because last weekend I worked, so.
Okay.
This weekend I went off.
Okay, so where is it? What time?
It's at 9 o'clock at the Public Works Conference Room A and B.
All right.
The main office.
Dose. The main office and the gate on
Ringette
will be
open. That's where I saw our last Allen Creek mapped, so I went out there for that at night, one night. So, okay, Public Works.
It's not a bad idea to, over the next year, the previous board had the goal, nobody did it but me, is ride the system. So the Wolf Creek route's the only one I haven't done yet that I'm aware of. So I've taken the one to Medford. It's really useful, but also challenging to do an appointment and get back in a fashion. It worked out. I had the luxury to be able to move it around. But
you had Larry come pick you up in the airplane?
The only way you're ever going to customize a transit system is with a taxi cab.
Yeah. I'm an Uber driver.
If you want to be there at a certain
place
at a certain time, you pay more for that privilege, or you pay insurance and you have a car and upkeep and everything else. This thing here is meant to be basically, you know, very, very basic transportation to where you don't have to have any of the responsibility. My sister lived in San Francisco for years, never owned a car. She's BART, rapid transit.
Or cabs.
For years, or tax cab.
Mm-hmm.
I did a parking ride in Seattle. And if I missed that bus and had to drive and pay parking and all that downtown, but I can tell you from downtown, it is a free ride zone in the downtown corridor. And so you knew you can catch any bus in downtown and ride anywhere in downtown for free. And so the high frequency, you just had people using all the time. But then it's the commuters coming into town that were the ones paying. But I also knew if I worked late, I was going to have a heck of a long ride because the frequency goes down at night. And they didn't just go straight to the park and ride. So now I have to ride all the way up Highway 99 all the way and take an hour and a half drive back to Edmonds. And I don't know. There's payoff, but what gets it going is the high frequency, which you guys are talking about. But you have to have all those mini loops coming into it, and then you have the high frequency on the 1 and 2. So.
That's essentially what we've been trying to do, but it's to the point now it's just very difficult to maintain it.
Yeah.
And maintain the connectivity, reliability. So. All right.
Almost like Dan's idea, though, that the quads, that you get a... You get a Williams, you get a Rogue, you get a Bridge, you get a F Street, and you just do those circles, and then you have the 1 and 2 going.
You just have a small bus because your ridership out there in these, on the one that shows the loops, it has the circles on it. you could put a smaller bus on all those ones and bring it back to the main run.
Would a smaller bus cost you less?
No.
Smaller bus costs the same as a big bus.
It's because it's the labor, just the driver behind the wheel. That's
smaller drivers.
We'll have
less.
Robots soon, so put them on electric.
That would have to be
smaller drivers cost less.
I heard who's the representative from Eugene?
So the reason I understand your stack focused community, I just want to thank you for this opportunity to come before the board. Nothing against your input, but I think it's going to be really important that we're, as an opportunity to listen to these user groups there. Our session was today. And then we'll have another one, I think, after we hear that. So I'm really encouraged that you're going to go there and you're going to hear these people, and they're going to have different concerns than us. Every group there is going to have
different concerns.
They're going to have different issues, and they're going to want the world. Everybody, you know, who's a user, we're going to have to deal with that constraint of we have X number of dollars, and this is where it's coming from, and this is where we got. And try to meet all those needs, and I think this is going to be really positive. We haven't had one of these, and just to have the conversation about the alternatives and that spectrum that you provided was really key. That there is an there's a gives and takes and all that. We're just going to have to evaluate that. But
yeah, and there's a real choice here. It's not just technical stuff that we go do at our technical desk. There's a choice that anyone can understand.
Well, I appreciate that. There's certainly a level of understanding that you guys bring to this. As consultants, you really know your stuff, and we deal with consultants not every day but very, very often, and so they're not all created equal, and I think that there's a good selection, Scott, so thank you very much.
We're going to shift from this gear into another gear.
Now you're going to talk
in,
about
in 34 minutes we're going to be talking about stuff
I should just say what are our next steps. Dan just reminded me. So the stakeholder meeting is obviously on Saturday. I'm really glad you can attend. Then there's going to be a web survey that will be open for a little while. If you can help promote the web survey, email it out, Facebook notices, you know, just so that people who don't even ride the bus take it, because this is a choice that really matters to everybody. There is the option to come back to the board for policy guidance before we draft the plan. You know, come back to the board with a memo saying, here's what we heard from the public.
I always encourage
that. Here's what we heard from the stakeholders. Give it, it seems like they, the centroid of their opinion is about here. What do you think, board? And then the board can actually make the policy decision about this.
We almost are requiring that at every consultant, because what I don't like to hear is that your decision and recommendation is guided by what sometimes can be construed as special interest, and there's no one with the responsibility to provide the community's perspective but us.
Right.
And so guiding what we would like, we want to be tracking in the same direction, and so that's always key. We've had that with our economic development. We have a public works one right now. It's really key.
Good.
And I think that's a great recommendation.
So I like to do it, for one, because you are the policy board, right? We don't set policy. You set the policy. But the other reason I like to do it is it's much more efficient for us to draft the plan after we're sure that we know what your direction is, rather than drafting a whole plan, giving you a 60-page draft, and then you have to read the whole thing just to find out what the nugget of the change is. So,
Thank you.
I don't know that it would be us coming in person, but maybe that's something Scott can figure
sure.
out how to have that conversation.
We can definitely
We
have
also
that.
Can teleconference if we need.
Okay.
If
wonderful.
We can figure it out.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Great discussion, such good questions, and I enjoyed learning more about your community just through your questions. So
thank you.
Thanks.
All right, thank you.
I don't think there's anything else for us. So the board is adjourned at 3:28.